You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Well, folks, one of our listeners, by the name of Chuck Stenberg from Salem, Oregon, emailed us and suggested we interview Terry Fader. So, that's what we're going to do. See, we like to please the people here on the Drew Marshall Show. We're all about you, despite the name of the show. Terry not only captured the hearts of Americans with his rousing victory on America's Got Talent, but he also won the heart of the godfather of Christian rock, playing in the background here, Mr. Larry Norman, and performed at Larry's last birthday party. Now Terry's hilarious live show is playing at the Mirage in Las Vegas, where he brings to life his puppet co-stars through comic banter and their hilarious takes on musical superstars like Cher, Justin Timberlake, Elvis Presley, Garth Brooks. It goes on and on and on. It's a cast of thousands, folks. Oh, wait a minute. That's the name of the show. You've never seen Terry Fader until you've seen Terry Fader in his cast of thousands, only at the Mirage in Vegas. TerryFader.com. Folks, have a listen to this.
Okay, here we go. Now listen to this. Our next guest won the 2007 America's Got Talent competition and just this week signed a five-year, $100 million contract with the Mirage Resort and Casino. Yeah, $100,000 for talking to a sock.
David, $100,000. He just said $100 million. Stay with it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome ventriloquist Terry Fader.
Yeah! Folks, that's who's joining us on the show today. That was Mr. Letterman giving him the intro of his life. He always dreamt of being on the Letterman Show, and it's just become so much more than that. Now joining us on our show is the one and only Terry Fader. How you doing, man?
I am doing so good. Boy, I feeling good. It's my one-year anniversary here at the Mirage. I'm excited.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Isn't like it's just surreal, man. You have had the trip of the century.
I know. It's crazy. And to have gone from being totally unknown and obscure, and I was playing very small shows. I was doing elementary schools and small county fairs type shows, and finding America's Got Talent, and wow, skyrocketing to levels that I just never could have possibly dreamed of.
Well, Terry, from the research that I've done, seems to me it all started when you were 3 years old, standing on a table in the lunchroom at your church, singing to a bunch of adults. You remember that?
I do. Yes, that's one of my very first memories. In fact, I remember I was standing on a lunch table. Singing, and I remember seeing people's faces. They were smiling and laughing and clapping, and I thought, wow, I really like this. This is I like this feeling. I want this feeling a lot.
You know, I was thinking about, I don't have a lot of childhood memories. I think I blocked a lot of stuff. I'm going to have some hypnotism or, so, I don't know, something. Talk to a puppet. Maybe I should talk to you. But I do remember queuing up Cracklin' Rosie by Neil Diamond while my parents were entertaining people in the rec room downstairs, and then I jumped across the doorway, kind of like a Tom Cruise in that movie. Remember, we slid across the Risky Business, I guess. And I remember that stuff. I remember wanting to entertain people. So now I get this sort of memory thing that you've got. I didn't believe it at first, but
yeah, they say that every big entertainer, someone who like has dedicated themselves to entertainment, has one memory that is very, very strong in them. Or not necessarily, it may not be a memory, but it's a moment in their life that sort of defined that's what they were. And you know, I heard an interview with a psychotherapist who had been dealing with people like Michael Jackson and Prince and Madonna and all of these people, and had interviewed them, and they all had this one moment. And when I was listening to it on the radio, I thought, hey, I have that moment. I remember when I was standing on the table, and I thought, yeah, this is what I like.
Yeah. Well, then you started doing impressions when you were six. Do you remember the first impression you did?
Well, I used to do these Bill Cosby impressions and Jose Jimenez. Do you remember Jose Jimenez?
Yes.
Yes, I used to. So my dad had these records, and I found them in his collection. And I would sit with my little record player, and I would listen to him over and over. And I would do these routines. I would do the whole things. I would, you know, my name Jose Jimenez, the teenager baseball star. You know, I would. So here I am, 6 years old, and I would learn these routines and these Bill Cosby routines. And then my parents would have parties, and you know, bring people from the church over, and they would always be like, "Oh, Terry, come in here and do your Bill Cosby." And so I'd come in and I would do entire routines for people,
man.
And they would just be in hysterics because here I was just six, and I was doing these word for word, inflection for inflection routines of Jose Jimenez and stuff. And then I got into impressions. I mean, ventriloquism when I was 10. And the only routines I knew were those Bill Cosby and Jose Jimenez routines. So I would have puppets play the part of Bill Cosby and the puppets play the part of Jose Jimenez. So I started, when I first started doing ventriloquism, I was doing impressions with those puppets. So yeah. It's kind of crazy.
You know, I've got a childhood buddy who's co-hosting today. Andy, do you remember you and I would do, what was the one, you know, Bill Cosby one we'd always talk about?
The chicken heart.
Yes, the chicken heart.
Oh, of course.
Or the snakes under the bed. Yeah. Snakes! I know you're down there, snakes!
You get out of there.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, it's funny because to this day, I'm so influenced by that stuff. And one of the reasons why my show is clean, I do a show in Vegas. It's something that you can take the whole family to. And the reason is because I can still listen to those old Bill Cosby routines.
Yeah.
You know, and they still make me laugh. They still make me smile. Here it is, 34 years later, I'm 40 years later, and I'm still enjoying them and still laughing and loving them. Whereas maybe a shock comic like, say, an Andrew Dice Clay, who is just absolutely filthy, might have been funny the first time I heard him, but now it's like, man, been there, done that. Yeah. Don't need to hear that anymore. So that's the problem with shock humor and dirty humor is it's funny the first time. It's not it doesn't stand the test of time. Whereas creative, clean humor always is timeless and forever.
So. Terry, you found this book on ventriloquism in your school library, and I got a couple of questions for you. Number one, what were you doing in your school library in the first place? And number two, what was this Valentine's Day project you were supposed to be doing?
Yeah, I was actually in the school library to get a book on Valentine's Day because the teacher had given us, getting close to Valentine's Day, and the teacher had given us an assignment to write a paper about what Valentine's Day was. So these were the days before you couldn't just look up something up on the Internet. We didn't even have computers.
Yeah.
And so you actually had to go and get a physical book. And go through a real physical card catalog, not, you know, go
yes,
through a little computer.
With the Dewey Decimal System, no less.
Dewey Decimal System, that's exactly right. And so I went in, and I was going flipping through the cards, and I was looking for the Vs and, you know, VAs, and it overshot the VAs, and it landed on a it said Ventriloquism for Fun and Profit by Paul Winchell. And I had been done some illusion magic tricks and stuff. You know, we had a little magic shop that was not too far from the house. And I would play with learning how to do play with cards and coins and disappearing sponge balls and things like that. And I thought, oh my goodness, wow, ventriloquism, that sounds like fun. That really would be something cool. So I totally forgot about my Valentine's Day project and checked out the ventriloquism book instead. Took it home, read it. Took me about a day, and I was learning how to say, you know, A, D, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, N, N, O, T, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought, I can do this. So my mom helped me buy a puppet from Sears.
Yeah, Willie Talk Dummy, wasn't it?
Willie Talk, that's right. And so we got this little Willie Talk Dummy, and it just had a string that came out. I mean, most of us that have tried ventriloquism, and I am astounded at how many people tried to do ventriloquism. In fact, one of my favorite stories, I did play for Larry Norman's 60th birthday party, and we became very, very close friends, and he always told me that his dream was to be a ventriloquist. He had a little puppet, and he always wanted to be a ventriloquist, and after he passed away, his family sent me this little ventriloquist puppet that he had gotten when he was 10. But I got one when I was 10. My mom took it apart and put a stick on his head so that I could turn his head and give him a little bit more movement.
Nice.
And we started doing, she started helping me get birthday parties and church shows, and I was making $25 a show.
Nice.
And just trying to make a career out of it. I knew when I was about 11 that I was going to do this professionally, that's all I ever wanted to do.
2007, you won America's Got Talent, started with David Hasselhoff saying, oh no, a ventriloquist, which I think, to be quite honest, Terry, there are many of us in that camp that might say the same thing, because we've seen so many bad ventriloquists, and this is sort of akin to my other theory about there, that a bad mime is a good thing to waste.
That's right. That's a very good point. And what's interesting is that if you look at, there's like some sort of a hierarchy of entertainment, and mime is on the bottom, and ventriloquism is right above mime. So we're second to the last in when they have their little entertainment hierarchy. I don't know who came up with that, but it sounds pretty right to me, because you're right. Most ventriloquists are absolute just horrible, just terrible. And so I think we come to expect this, just schlocky kind of cheesy humor that's really something only little bitty kids could possibly like because of the puppets. People are creeped out by them because the puppets are not very lifelike and they don't come alive. Very few people are creeped out by the Muppets, though, you notice.
I know. And seriously, when your mom put that stick on your first puppet, that gave it the Chucky factor, did it not?
It could have. The thing is, though, is that I was really born with an interesting gift, and that is that I can animate just about anything. I mean, you could get me a handkerchief, and I could put it over my hand, and I could draw some eyes, and I could animate it and make it look like it was really talking. So most people, it probably would have felt like Chucky, but pretty much immediately I was able to bring it to life and make it seem like a real character. And so that's just one of the gifts. I mean, I, when I look at all of the different things that I can do combined, it's kind of scary. God really, really was overdoing it when he handed out the talent on the day I was born, because I feel so grateful for the abilities that I have, because you can't just wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to start doing impressions and ventriloquism and puppeteering and comedy and singing and all of this stuff. You have to be born with a gift, and I just took that gift and worked with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, then you won over Mr. Hasselhoff when you and Sarah Boyle kind of cut loose. I mean, Emma Taylor, sorry. Because she really was like the Emma Boyle the Sarah Boyle of your show, right? I mean, Emma Taylor came out and just started belting it, and everybody's jaws just went open.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I got a lot of people that would call me from all over, from news organizations all over the world, that would say, "So, tell us what Susan Boyle is feeling like." And I would say, I pretty much do know how she feels, because she's definitely the dark horse. Nobody expected much from her. And to come out and just wow the judges, it's a great feeling. It really, really is. And when David Hasselhoff said, "Oh no, it's a ventriloquist," I didn't panic, and I didn't think, "Oh, here we go." I actually thought to myself, "I've got him exactly where I want him," because I knew there was no way they could possibly expect for that voice to come out of that little puppet.
Well, of course, signing the 5-year, $100 million contract, which you're not allowed to talk about, with the Mirage Hotel and Casino. Did you send Paul Winchell, the author of that book you got from the school library, a little thank you note at least?
I certainly did, but he had already passed away when it all happened. But I sent his daughter a little thank you and told her, expressed to her how very grateful I was to her dad for his influence on me. Got a nice note back, and she actually sent me some amazing memorabilia, some stuff that he carried around with him in his pocket with him his whole career. And so it was an interesting kind of a touching moment that I was able to just thank April Winchell for her dad's amazing influence.
Cool.
And of course, Edgar Bergen had a big influence on me as well. And just any of the ventriloquists, because I decided when I was about 15, of course, as a ventriloquist, you would look into all of the different ventriloquists. So, of course, Jay Johnson, who was on Soap, Willie Tyler and Lester, Edgar Bergen, Jimmy Nelson. Do you remember Jimmy Nelson and Farfel? Farfel did the N-E-S-T-L-E-E. Or N-E-S-T-L-E chocolate.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Chocolate.
Thanks for the comment. Yeah.
Yes. Well, he was a big influence on me, too, because I had his record albums. All of this was before my time, but I had record albums and books and things and a cassette tapes of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Very cool.
And so, I just really had no social life, and I spent all of my time listening to Edgar Bergen and Jimmy Nelson and Paul Winchell. And just dreaming of one day being the next great ventriloquist. And I thought to myself, I want, when the time comes, when it's all over for me, I want people to put my name up there with Edgar Bergen and Paul Winchell and Jimmy Nelson and Willie Tyler and Lester and Jay Johnson. And I hope I'm well on my way to doing that.
If David Hasselhoff had maybe come in after a long day of Smirnoffing and voted against you, would you have finally put the puppets away?
Absolutely not. No, I was having way too much fun.
Because you were close to that, though. You've talked about the fact that you were... Who wants to see a 43-year-old ventriloquist, ladies and gentlemen?
You're right. Now, I did get very discouraged because my dream from the time I was 10, I even found an old article in the newspaper in the Dallas Morning News. I'm from Dallas, Texas. And I found an old article in the Dallas Morning News where they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be famous. So it was a dream of mine from the time I was a kid to be famous one day. And the dream of being famous, it was very discouraging, and there were a lot of times when I said, you know, I just can't do this anymore because it was hard to pay the bills. You know, sometimes it was just hard to, I had to get, like, odd jobs with family members. I'd have to ask family members, can I come rake your yard? Can I come paint your house? And will you pay me a little bit so I can pay the mortgage? And that was the most discouraging, and that was when I was like, you know, I think I'm ready to give this up. But the problem is that I just have too much love for the craft and the art and the entertainment. I love it too much. So nothing would stop me from giving it up, even if nothing had happened from America's Got Talent and I had to go back to doing fairs. The good thing was that I actually was making a career out of it. I was, by the time I was on America's Got Talent, I was doing shows for, I was doing working year-round, so I could have continued doing that. It was a very grueling schedule, but I could have continued doing it.
So you were getting more than one person showing up at a 1,200-seat theater.
Yes. Well, still occasionally I wasn't, but I think after an appearance on America's Got Talent, even if I hadn't won, if I'd been on two or three episodes, I think I could have gotten past that.
But yeah.
Yeah, that one, true story, I did a show at a 1,200-seat theater in Texas, and one 12-year-old boy showed up and sat right in the middle, and I did the show.
Oh, really?
I said, it's my job to do the show.
Well done.
The worst part of that story, though, is about 15 minutes into the show.
He left?
Three teenagers come in, and they sat down about four or five seats away from him. And I even said, I said, all right, we're getting a crowd. This is great. This is going to be good. And a couple of minutes later, a couple of guys came in and said, okay, go to work. And they started folding the chairs up in the auditorium in the middle
goodness.
Of my show. So I'm thinking, I said, well, I guess the show's over. They're folding the chairs up. So, and my sister was there, and she was running merchandise for me, which, of course, we had a huge sale day that day.
Yeah.
And she was laughing. She was laughing so hard. And I have to admit, it was very, very funny. But I was so discouraged, and I said, I was like, I don't know if I can continue doing this. And my sister just said, Terry, you're so good at this, and you really can't give it up.
Yeah.
You just can't. You have to keep plugging.
But, you know, the professionalism that comes of the fact that you continued to perform, even though there was one 12-year-old kid there, that's much like when Randy Stonehill came up here a couple of years ago. He did a sort of a comeback tour thing, and in his big Toronto gig at a big Bible college here, dude, I had to go through the dorms and pad the room with people. And yet it didn't faze Randy one bit. He gave 110%.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well done to you as well. So, okay, if you had packed it in, if something come along and you were just so discouraged that you just said, okay, forget it, that's it, what would have been next? I mean, would you have gotten the boys together from Texas the Band or Freedom Jam and gone back to your old haircut and covering Def Leppard and Guns Roses? Or...
No, those days were over. I definitely had a different idea and vision, and that's kind of a funny story. It's one of those ha ha, I told you so stories that that you so badly want to rub in the face of people in your past. And luckily, I don't do that. But we had this falling out. I was in a band for many, many years now, and the Freedom Jam was a band that was not my own. It was kind of set up by an organization, and we went around the country and did drug and alcohol awareness.
Right.
But Texas the Band was my own, and we just sort of, we'd been together for like 13 years, and we decided that we had different artistic vision. And I wanted to have more comedy and family stuff, and the other guys wanted to play in bars, and they wanted to drink and get drunk and play in bars and just play music. They were tired of the comedy and they're tired of the ventriloquism, and I said, well, you guys go your way, and I'll go my way, and I'll see what I can do with ventriloquism. And so I think I made the right call.
Yeah. But Terry, are you not worried that at the end of your five-year contract, doing 5 days a week, that right after your last performance, You're going to go out to the front of the Mirage and throw each and every one of your puppets into that waterfall of fire.
No. Never. I don't. I love what I do. It's not a grind. To me, I look at it this way. I used to have to travel all the time. I would wake up in a different city every day. I would get on a plane. I would go. There were many times when I would get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and bump into the wall because I'm like, oh, that was last night's hotel. It's not this one, you know. So a lot of times I didn't. I'd wake up and go, okay, where am I again? What state? I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So the fact that I get to go do my show, do what I love with all my heart, and then go home and sleep in my own bed. I could do this forever.
Nice.
I love this.
Okay, how many characters or voices do you do?
Well, I've never really counted, but I have yet to find an impression of a singer that I can't do yet. So,
okay, give us a little share. Can you do that on the spot, or is that too weird?
Let's see here. Share. Do you believe in life after love?
Holy cow. You just sent a shiver down parts I don't want to have shivers in. Man, you nailed that sucker.
Thank you.
I have a friend named Louise Duarte who travels with Tim Conway, and she's a celebrity impressionist. She goes on stage and does the whole thing, and George Burns. You don't do George Burns, do you?
No, I don't do speaking impressions anymore. I don't.
But him singing, he sang, right? He did a little singing.
Yeah, if I worked on it, I'm sure I could. I could do some George Burns, but I really more stay with pop and you know people from, but all generations. I mean, I do people from the 40s all the way up, you know, Nat King Cole through modern, you know, the Pussycat Dolls these days. So
what's your top three go-tos? You know, people all the time, right? It's at a party, you know, it's like when I was a pastor, they used to go, oh, you're a pastor, and you'd either get one of two reactions. Either people would become very socially awkward and avoid you, or they would start diving into theological nonsense, right? So I'm a human party favor trick or something, you know?
Yes, well, I am a human party favor, and I like to do it. So if people ask me to entertain at parties, I'm there.
What's your top three voices you go to right away?
Michael Jackson.
Give it to me.
Okay. She's out of my life. She's out of my life. So there's Michael Jackson.
Oh, I got another shiver, and you don't want to know about that one. Okay. And then give me one more.
And the next one is, hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here.
Holy cow, he nailed that one. Nailed it.
Are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side? And then, of course, Louis Armstrong. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. So,
unbelievable.
Those are my three favorites.
Andy, are you impressed?
It's very impressed. Are you doing the actual ventriloquism right now? Are you singing out loud, or are you actually just pretending like the puppet is singing?
No, I'm actually even when I do it on the phone, I know people don't believe this, but when I do it on the phone, I don't move my lips. So I say.
Oh, that's what you meant by that. Okay.
If you practice mistakes, you make mistakes.
Yeah.
So if I do an impression, so I do not move my lips.
One of my favorites that you do is Dougie Scott Walker, your annoying neighbor. But I got to ask you, did you actually have a neighbor like Dougie? I mean, did you grow up in a trailer park?
No. What he is, Dougie is, you know, we all, at least people my age, and I'm sure that it's the same nowadays, but we all knew the burners. We all knew those kids that kind of always smelled funny. They kind of smelled like the art class teacher's office. And they were sort of losers, and they loved rock music, and we always wondered what would happen to those people, you know?
Yeah.
And so my vision of Dougie was not anybody that I know now. It just was, you know, what would happen if that guy who was a burner in high school was the same exact guy when he's 40,
yeah,
you know, or whatever. I mean, he's ageless. I mean, we don't know how old Dougie actually is. But, you know, I know a lot of those guys, and they're actually very successful. And, you know, they all went into corporate and they're making lots of money and doing really, really well. But I thought, you know, what if it's the same? What if he never changed? What if it's the same exact way that he was in high school? You know, woo, oh yeah, hey, this is great, you know, that kind of thing. And so Dougie was born that direction, that way.
My buddy Andy and I, we went to kindergarten right through grade 7 together. We grew up with each other, and we're looking at each other, naming off names of guys that were so like Dougie,
we
right?
Know that guy.
So we know that guy. We know him, man.
Well, that's what we do, is we all, that's how I create characters. I think of people that I actually know, or I've actually known, and I think, okay, I'll create a character. I have a character that's called a cougar. It's a older lady that really likes younger guys.
Yes.
Her name is Vicky. We call her Vicky the Cougar. She's not based on one particular person, but you know, we all know those older ladies. It gets a lot of plastic surgery. They want to stay looking young, and they want to date hot young guys. And so so I just thought this would make a very fascinating and interesting character.
Yeah.
You know,
that creeped me out a lot, because these days, at this point in my life, the only women that pay any attention to me other than my wife are large cougars. And they're aggressive beasts, unbelievably aggressive.
That's funny.
Okay, so
they are.
Terry, you grew up in a janitor's family, and by the way, there's a great bit they did on Everyone Loves Raymond where the entire family kept putting their feet in their mouths because they discovered one of their kids' friends' father is a janitor, and they just got all awkward about it.
I remember that episode, and it went, and of course I was in hysterics on that episode.
You could dig that?
Yeah, absolutely, yes, because it is funny because we had a janitorial business, and we went to this church where every person in the church besides us was either a doctor or a lawyer or somebody influential, you know, some of the city leaders, you know, and wow, I really got the feeling. I never got the feeling that we belonged. I always got the feeling that they felt we were their ministry. And there is no worse feeling than when you know you're somebody's ministry. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to be your ministry.
No.
I'm very proud of myself. And I'm not, you know, we weren't poor. I mean, it wasn't like we you know, we're wearing tattered shoes or anything. You know, we were always wearing nice stuff. It was always Sears Tough Skins and Kmart shoes.
Yeah.
But they were new,
yeah.
You know.
Your church shoes were steel-toed, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was humiliating in that way, in that I just didn't feel a part. You know, when everybody else was wearing the Izods, and God, I so wanted to have an alligator on my shirt one day.
Oh.
But we just couldn't afford them. You know, we just couldn't. And
yeah.
So it was very frustrating for us that for me, I talked to my brother, and he's like, I never cared about that kind of stuff, but I did. And we would go and do these little, rake leaves or something at a rich person's house, and I would think, wow, I'd love to have a house like this one day. And so I really had a vision to do more. So what I would do is, while we were cleaning buildings and raking leaves and mowing lawns and whatever we were doing to make money, I would practice my ventriloquism. I would put my Walkman on, my headphones on, and I would sit there and sing. And I grew up listening to nothing but Christian music. So Larry Norman was one of my early influences. David Meese,
yeah.
Steve Taylor.
Mark Hurd.
Mark Hurd, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would listen to these guys, and I would practice singing what they were singing without moving my lips.
Huh.
And so that's really how I learned to do what I do. And
I got to say, because you're in a different world now, I'm your janitor now, okay? But you probably haven't had time to do this, but I would encourage you to go to our website, drewmarshall.ca. There is a killer two-part interview I did with Larry just prior to his death. And, man, it was thorough and unbelievable. I mean, uncut. I remember one particular moment I said, hey, Larry, when are you going to come out with your worship CD? And he said, oh, yeah, never.
Yeah, Larry was an absolutely phenomenal human being, and I just, you know, I loved him with all my heart. It was an amazing experience to be able to get to know him in the last year of his life. I actually flew him to Las Vegas for my very first debut Las Vegas performance.
Very cool.
And he said that that it was probably the best time he had ever had in his entire life. He was such a fan from America's Got Talent. He watched me on the show. He would call me as soon as the show was over. He would call me and he would go, okay, Terry, you were great, but here's what you should do next week, you know. And we would sit there and talk about what to do in the next show. So he was really involved during the America's Got Talent stuff. And I was just, it was such a heartbreaking loss. But the good thing about being a Christian is that you know when you lose someone you love that you'll see him again.
You know, as you're describing Larry, I can just see Randy rolling his eyes, right? Randy Stonehill. He and I were having lunch one time, and Randy kind of ordered, you know, the weird American have to change the order six times even though they really don't have it on the menu kind of thing. I said, dude, what are you doing? Like, this is Canada. We don't do that stuff here. He's like, oh, this is nothing. When we go out for dinner with Larry, Larry would be like, could I have this Salisbury steak? And could you just scrape off the stuff on the, just off the meat and put it on the side? And could you get me like extra ice in there? And Randy be like, dude, they're gonna spit in your food, man. Knock it off.
That's exactly what he would do. We would take him out when we were at the Las Vegas Hilton when I was performing there, and that's exactly how he ordered. And it was great because he wasn't feeling so well, so I got him a cart, and my sister is disabled, and so she had to have a cart too. And he and my sister would go have cart races all over the casino. It was so much fun. And he literally had more fun. He said he had more fun on that trip than he had in his entire life.
That's cool.
And he was so happy that he had that experience. I also flew him out to the one of the episodes of America's Got Talent. I think somebody actually on YouTube, I believe they even pointed him out and circled him. And he was in the audience with a sock puppet rooting for me. So,
oh man! Well, listen, folks, on the line with Terry Fader, just about to say goodbye. You are on the Forbes top 10 earning comedians, tied with one of our people up here, a comedian Russell Peters.
Cool.
So good for you for being Mr. Moneybanks there, Mr. Funny Moneybanks. Is the name Jeff Dunham a bad word in your vocabulary? Are you and Jeff on the same page?
Yeah. You know, I don't know Jeff, and I want to meet him. I met him when I was 10, and absolutely it is not a bad word to me because Jeff was a big influence on my career. I'm a huge fan. I've been rooting for him ever since the beginning, and I think there's plenty of room out there for two ventriloquists.
Yeah. And, now, for those of you who are listening, don't know Jeff Dunham. All you have to say is Ahmed the Terrorist.
Ahmed the Dead Terrorist.
That's right.
The other day, I was doing my show, and somebody from the back of the crowd said, "Do Ahmed," and I said, "Well, actually, that's Jeff Dunham, but thanks for paying attention," you know. There was a guy from the LA Times that was in the audience, and he called me to do an article. And he goes, "Yeah, so what do you think about that guy yelling out Ahmed?" And I said, "Well, I said, I guess maybe he just can't believe that he lives in a world where two ventriloquists are famous." So he thinks.
Nice. Have you gone to visit Mel Gibson yet?
I have not gone to visit Mel Gibson, but he came to visit me, so.
He was doing a little research, wasn't he?
He told me that that if he gets that part, he's going to call me up, and we're gonna hang, and I'm going to teach him how to do some puppeteering. So
nice.
That would be surreal.
We talk about Ray Romano's show. Now, he's come out to see you as well.
Yes, he has. He's seen the show a number of times.
Good.
And he brought his kids and his family and everybody, and we all met backstage, and he's a really cool guy.
He is a very cool guy. I worked with, not with him, but I was on the same set as he was working on a movie called Welcome to Mooseport.
I remember Welcome to Mooseport.
That was a shocker. I mean, you know, Gene Hackman and Ray Romano, you think it'd be a, anyway. But here I am. What am I? I was the moose wrangler on the show, you know, standing there with my arms out, making sure Debbie the Moose didn't run down the street. So that was, that was my big part. Liberty University?
Yes.
What did that do to you?
Liberty University is actually a great memory for me, but I was not very happy there. I didn't like it. Mainly because it was they were so very strict and legalistic with so many silly rules, in my opinion. I just felt like, you know, it was one of those things where they said, you know, if you get out of bed, you have to put a tie on. I don't care if you're just walking to breakfast or anytime you're – now, I'm sure that they're not that way anymore, but this was back in 1983, and they really were strict about that. So you had to wear, slacks and a tie, and that was just the rule.
Yeah.
And your hair could not touch the top of your ears. And I just felt like if you're going to have rules, you really should have a reason for them. I mean, I don't mind wearing a tie on Sunday. I don't mind wearing a tie when it's a special day. But why? This should be my home. I should be comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not allowed out of my dorm room without a tie on. I said, this is ridiculous. And so they had college for a weekend one time, and they were bringing out kids from all over the world to come and look at the university, and I wore something like 65 or 85 ties. I had them tied all over my arms and legs, and I just, and they would ask me, they would say, why are you doing that? And I'd say, well, I just want to make sure all the College for a Weekend kids know that you have to wear a tie when you come
well
here.
Done. Oh, and you're an iconoclast, aren't you? You are.
Well, you know, I never did anything really bad. You know, I never drank or smoked or did drugs or swore or anything like that. I would have my little protests in my own little way. The people, you know, some of the teachers loved me. Some of the teachers were like, yeah, you go. You do it. And then some were like, oh, you rebel, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was just one of those things where everybody's kind of separated into I hate Terry Fader or I love Terry Fader camps at Liberty.
Dude, we'd be kindred spirits, that's for sure. Folks, Tuesday through Saturday at 7:30, if my facts are correct, at the Mirage Hotel and Casino down in Las Vegas. Well done. And I suck at praying, but I promise when your name comes to my brain, I will pray that God keeps you from the loopiness of that industry. Because if you become an arrogant untouchable, I will fly down there and give you the biggest wedgie you've ever had in your life.
Well, you know what? It's really all about who you surround yourself with. If you surround yourself with yes men, that's when you become one of those people.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have surrounded myself with my family and my close friends, and every single one of them would smack me up six ways from Sunday if I tried to become a jerk. So.
Good on you. Terry, thanks, man. Just fantastic talking to you. Just absolutely loved hearing your heart, man.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
Terry. Had a great time.
You take care, man.
You too.
Bye-bye. Can I say man anymore? Like I'm cool or something?
Dude.
I know I said that too.
Thanks, dude.
Seriously. I got into one of his characters, Trailer Park Guy. That was cool. I like him. Good guy. Terry Fader. I'm glad he's been blessed with his success. I just, as I said, I really hope it doesn't mess with his head.
Amazing talent.
Yeah. Folks, a short break when we come back. Are you kidding me? Sarah Evans is on the show? Oh, my goodness.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.